Okay, so let me start Vav, Mishnah Vav. Okay, so it says like this: Yehoshua ben Parachia, v'nitai har Bailey kibu mehem. Yehoshua ben Parachia omer aselecha rav. Okay, u'kineilecha chaver v'hevedas kol adam lekaf schus. Okay, so let's take aselecha rav. Okay, make for yourself a Rav, alright? So if you take a look at Rashi, he says, Aselecha Rav, Shalotehe Atalome La'atzmacha Misvara, Ela Min HaRav Umin HaShmua. Okay? So you shouldn't learn for yourself from Svara, Ela from a Rav or Shmua. Okay? So, what are they saying here? That you're not supposed to get involved in Svara.
I guess we should stop here.
Stop here? That's right. Go no further. Should have told me this from Parak Mishnah.
We closed the book a long time ago. it's coming to say like don't paskin from Svara.
Okay, but I should paskin from what?
From Rav's teaching, even
from our teaching.
From somebody that's like better. I don't know, man.
Okay, I mean the problem is, it's interesting you brought that up because the problem is. In other words, could you paskin anything not from Svara? In other words, if you only rely on Shmua, on Bikias, on the cases that you have that are recorded, okay, the factual knowledge, if you only rely on that, you'll be very good posek if the She'elos are ones that are the one of the cases that you have. But the problem is, if somebody asks you a shaila that there is no case for, that will be a slight difficulty. Then the person will be somewhat, in a quandary. Unless he has a svara that he extracted from the case that he has, he extracted a svara, and now he could apply that svara to many different cases. That's the whole point of a svara. Because why do I need svara? If I have the facts, so that's it. What do you need a svara for? You want to be a big theoretician? Fine. But what do you need svara for in terms of understanding what to do? The answer is, you need svara because there's a limit to how many cases can be actually brought down. And if your case does not fit precisely into the cases that you have, that's it. You don't know what to do. Unless you have a svara. Okay. And second of all, the cases that are brought down are very few, because the cases that are in the Mishnah and Gemara they don't bring extra cases. Why? Because they give you a case so that you can understand it and come up with the svara. Then we don't need to have 100 cases. We just need enough cases to allow you to understand the svara. Then you'll have all the 100 cases on your own. You could paskin on your own. Okay? So you can't possibly have a system where every case is brought down, and therefore, you must have a svara to paskin. Okay? Mm-hmm. So how could the Rashi tell us here? If every Rashi is svaras, right? So Rashi's saying, no svara, just a Rav and Shmua. Okay, so that's a little problematic.
I think he means that don't. It's funny thing to say. Lamin the atzmacha misvara. It's a little convoluted. It's not simply saying don't use svara.
Right.
A lot of people have said don't use svara.
Right.
But he's saying when you're teaching to yourself, don't do it simply from Svara.
Okay.
You also have to use the Rav and the Shmua. I was just listening to old Shir from Rebbe, it was about the Megillah, whatever. But he's saying that you can't always just use your logic,
right?
And that you could logically prove a lot of things,
right?
You could not prove a lot of things that definitely are logically,
right?
But a normal person will know when to use the logic and when not to.
Right.
So he's saying you have to become that normal person based on the Rav and the Shmua.
Okay, good. So I mean that's the other aspect of this. If it is, it's telling you, if you'll say that you cannot use just Svara, you can't just have a theory, right? But you must base the theory on factual knowledge. Right? If you'll tell me that's what it's saying, then don't just rely on theoretical knowledge, or theoretical formulations. But every theory you say has to be based on factual information. You have to have Rav and Shmua to have the facts, and then you can get the svaras. Then you can go into theory. But you can't go into theory before you have the facts. If that's what it's saying, that would seem to be pashut. I mean, that's not a theory. If a person starts theorizing without facts, obviously that's absurd, right? So obviously you need both. The answer is you need both. You need factual knowledge. Okay, you have to research your information to have a firm factual basis. And then once you have the facts, now you can formulate a theory to explain the facts. Okay, so that again, that is true, that's certainly true, but it would seem that's obvious. Okay, you don't need, right? It would seem that it's just telling you the obvious. Don't think you could theorize things without knowing any facts. Okay? Right? So obviously the on the surface we would say you need both. Person needs facts, but once you have the facts, you also have to have understanding. You can't just you can't have only facts, but you must understand them and then use your mind to understand the facts and come to a theory, come to an idea. Okay, but you need both. Okay, so what's the Mishnah warning you against? That's the question.
You're saying that Rav and Shmua is simply the facts.
I would say. Because if it's Svara, well, that's Svara.
Well, I mean, when you learn from a Rav, he guides where your intuition would go. Like
right.
That's what I mean. That you could always logically prove something, but a rational person might not accept it. So the Mishnah is saying that you have to be aware that as smart as you are, you might. You might not have the right intuition.
Okay.
So you have to get that from the Rav. So it's not just the facts. It's knowing when to. It's having that sense of when your logic is acceptable or not.
Okay. And what about Shmua?
I mean, the Rav got it from Shmua.
Okay, from Shmua, all right. Okay, so, but whatever, you know, however you're going to read the what's meant by Svara, Shmua, and Rav, but I'd just like to understand what's the idea. In other words, so what's the final idea that we're supposed to take from this? In other words, we know you need the facts, and we know that once you have facts, the basis of the facts, then you can think about it and come to a theory. Okay, so what is it warning you against? That's what I'd just like to understand.
I mean, one little thing maybe is I think when a person learns, I mean, the Lama La Atzmacha sticks out. Like, why is he saying Lama La Atzmacha? He's not saying Paskin, by the way. He's saying, like, Lama.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe, some of the person learns, they could be, especially if they're learning by themselves without a rub, let's say, or without proper, whatever, without proper guidance. So then you can get kind of overconfident, like, oh yeah, that's where it worked out. That's
right.
You know, you have a lot of confidence in your ideas if you don't like get it checked by someone who knows more. You know.
That's a basic approach, right?
Right.
I agree with that. In other words, what you're saying is that you need the facts, and the theory has to be based on the facts. But what he's telling you is that make sure the theory is based on the facts. In other words, you can take a theory much further than the facts justifying. Okay? And it's still based on facts. Okay? But there's a limit to how far a theory can go. That's basically what it's telling you. There's a limit to how far you can take a theory. Okay? Meaning, let me give you an example. Like the famous example that everybody teaches is the Greeks, right? Like Aristotle said, he was a great investigator and great theoretician and a logical mind, but he said that a heavier thing falls faster than a lighter thing. And now you can do a simple experiment and show that false. Okay, so what really was he just a foolish guy? I mean, what really went on? But what the answer is that they relied on theory to a larger extent than is justified. In other words, theory, the mind works theoretically as long as only if it's firmly based on facts. Okay? And what happens is that a person can go beyond what the facts justify, use that part of the mind on its own. Once you do that, you're in trouble. That's what it's saying. And that was, it was saying that the mind is a very good tool and it has a very accurate way of understanding ideas. But there's one limitation. It has to be tied very closely to the facts. It has that limitation. A person that goes into theory that sees how wonderful the mind is, that he can understand things, you see, he has a tendency to attribute that function to the mind in an independent way and say my mind has the mind is an unbelievable tool for understanding, and he tends to assume that it can go on its own. Okay, it's a very good tool, but only under one condition, only under the conditions that it's closely tied to the facts. The moment the tool goes on its own, it's an amazing thing, really. Because he would think the mind, it's a logical thing, it understands, it comprehends reality. But the moment it goes slightly beyond the facts, it becomes like almost negligible. Which you might not really know, you see. So nowadays they always attribute this, they give a good example for this to the Greeks. But of course they don't look at themselves and they don't notice that you have an example really in modern day science. Okay, because you have a case where Einstein, who came up with an unbelievable theory of relativity, okay, but then he concluded from that theory that that the universe was eternal. Okay? He took the theory to show that the universe did not have a beginning. Okay? And what happened was another mathematician used his same formulas and showed from those formulas how it definitively proves that the world, that there was a creation. Okay? That his very formulas showed that the world is not eternal. Okay? And what happened was Einstein, when he saw that, he had to recant. And he said that was a great mistake that he made, that he made an adjustment there to show that the world was eternal, that the universe was eternal. Okay? So there you have the same exact case. You have a case where a person in his field, where he had tremendous intuition, but the moment he went slightly beyond what the facts dictate, it's of no use. And his intuition was that the universe must be eternal, that's the way all of his ideas led him. You see, but the moment he made that assumption, and it wasn't based on firm facts, that's it. It's just worthless. It has no value. Okay, so the greatest mind, but the moment the mind goes one step beyond the facts, even if it's in his area where the person has the greatest knowledge, that same tool becomes practically useless. Okay, so that's really a remarkable thing, that you see that it's something that people don't really know, even though you should know it, but people don't know it. Even people that are the greatest scientists miss that fact. Okay, so that's basically what it's telling you. Okay, so it's saying svara, yes, but only when it's tied directly to the facts. When it goes beyond the facts, forget it. Okay? Yeah.
Well, you just said that they don't know this. But you don't mean that they don't know it factually, right? You, I mean that. More like an emotional problem, right?
They know it. In other words, they know it in an informational type of way. You know what I mean? But it still affects them.
I'm saying it's like a trick of the mind.
Trick of the mind. You know what I mean? You don't want to stop the theoretical part of the mind. You say, the theoretical part of the mind is leading me there, and you want to feel that you could just go independently. You know what I mean? And then you forget that the theoretical part of the mind only is reliable if it's tied to simple facts. You see, a person as a theoretician wants to believe that he can go beyond the simple facts. These are the facts that tie me down. He doesn't want to be tied down. But that's the thing. Okay? So that's the memory according to Rashi. Okay? Okay, so now, alright? Good? Makes sense? Okay. Now he says like this. Ukenei lecha chaver. Okay? So Rashi says, Amri la svarim, the Amri la chaver. Mamash. Okay, so some say it means svarim, and some say it means an actual chaver. Okay. So Rashi says, why lefisha tovim hashnayim min ha'echad? Let's go else. V'chein hu omer cherev al abadim v'no'alu. Okay. So, correct. So he's saying that a person that wants to learn has to have a chaversa. That's how he's learning. Kanei lecha chaver means that if a person is involved in learning, he must have a chaversa. Okay. So what's the... And he quotes the pasuk that if a person learns on his own, he becomes foolish. He becomes stupid. Okay. So what's the... what's the idea here? That when a person studies, he must make sure not to study alone, but to study with chaversa.
It's probably more of what you were saying. You always have to have a check.
That he must be right. In other words, that when a person studies, he cannot be objective about his own ideas. Right? And if he's alone, he starts to go into the area, starts to say ideas, and he becomes convinced that the ideas are true. If he doesn't have anybody to check him, to ask him a question, or to challenge him, then he starts to slowly believe what he's saying. You say he starts to believe in himself. Okay? It's a quick step, right? A person sits down to learn, and he comes up with an idea, and he thinks, "Wow, that's a great idea! Happy I thought of that." Right? Very often, if you're sitting with somebody else, he looks at you and he asks you a question, and then, "Oh, I didn't think about that." But without that other person, not that it's necessarily such a difficult thing to think of. But very often a person becomes in love with his own idea. Okay? So that's why it's very important to have another person to learn with. Okay? But what about Rashi says maybe a sefer? Maybe a sefer is good. Okay? So what would you say is the possibility that a sefer could, some say a sefer could substitute for chaver, others say not. You need an actual person there. Okay, so how would you how would you formulate the argument in favor of a sefer or only a chaver? Yeah.
I mean, like, we're assuming the sefer was written by a guy who, like, mastered the material, you know? And, like, he knew the material better, so it's like a rav.
Okay. An intelligible, something that was written by an intelligent author.
Yeah. I mean, usually no one writes books unless they're an expert in that field.
Usually, right. Occasionally you could find people that learn by themselves and decide that they have such fantastic ideas they want to share with somebody, right.
Yeah.
But discounting that, right, person that...
Like Bill O'Reilly or...
Right.
Like
exactly. Right. But a person that really, yes, a person that's authentic and writes a book, so he has good ideas. So if that's the case, so then... Would that be equivalent to a chaver? Would that be as good as a chaver? In other words, if you tell me, listen, I can read the book, and I have ideas that I can compare with, that I can learn from. So then, would that be? So then, right? Based on that argument, it would be just as good as a chaver, right? In what way? In what way then is the chaver preferable over the book?
Ask questions.
You can ask your questions, okay. Right? Okay. So, I mean, if that's the case, so then could you boil it down? Well, what is the... How does the book help you? How does the chaver help you?
The chaver, this is a very general, but like the chaver is interactive.
Okay.
Whereas the book is passive.
The book is passive, and the chaver is interactive. Okay.
And you can ask a person to elaborate on himself or explain his idea better. You can't ask a book.
Right.
So, like, the book is open to interpretation.
If you don't understand what the book is saying, that's it. You're stuck. I mean,
then it's just another thing that could lead you to, oh, now I could have my own thoughts about this book. Like.
Right. True. Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Whereas with the person, it's not ambiguous. Like
person is not ambiguous. Interactive.
Yeah.
There is an interactive element going on, whereas the book is not interactive. Okay. What are you gonna say?
No, I mean, I guess just like as to have some idea, like to have interaction, you're building each other up. I mean, it's not. I mean, I don't know if we're just looking at the perspective of like this specific person is learning, but it's also the questioning and that process allows for both of them to both the chavruta and the situation to grow or learn from each other.
Right. And when you have the sefer?
I mean, you're not really feeding off somebody else. There's not that, like, you know,
right.
That emotional.
Right. Okay. Yeah, what were you going
to
say?
That was just one line that my dad used to say. You don't learn from talking, you know. And like with a person, like people are all different. So like that, another person like brings something different to the table. So it's like you could,
right,
hear like other ideas.
Another idea, right? Another person brings something to the table that you don't have. That's right. So that really, in that respect, really, the sefer would be as good as another person. Right? Because the sefer brings other ideas to the table that you don't have. Okay? And without those ideas, you could overlook a point. A person could read something, look at it, overlook a point, and since he doesn't have any fresh ideas from another person, he could overlook something, an obvious point. Right? Okay, one second. I brought it down.
I thought you were going to show us a trick with the dollar. Yeah.
Okay. That's right. That's That's a good point. In other words, a person learning who just has his own ideas, sometimes if he would hear a different idea, he'd be able to see, hey, that's, now I see the right approach. You know what I mean? Or now I didn't have that idea, so my thing is way off. Okay, but if a person doesn't have that, that's it. He can't, there's no way for him to correct himself. So if it's the exposure to other ideas, then you're right. Then a sefer is just as good as a chaver. Okay, but the thing that the sefer does not have that the chaver has is, like you say, the interaction. In other words, if I need a direct interaction with my particular process, my thought process, I need somebody to interact with my thought process, to challenge me and question me, that you're not going to get from Sefer. In other words, if that's what you need to be objective, to have the objectivity, you need somebody who is questioning your idea, you know what I mean, and can poke holes in your idea, then you need an actual chaver. There's no way, a book is not going to do it. Okay? But that's if you say that in order for a person to be objective, he needs to test his idea. Okay, but some say it's enough if you have an exposure to other ideas, you see, that's enough. Because that's enough of a stimulus for a person. A person really, in other words, the thing is, what they're saying is, a person really could critique himself, but he needs some kind of platform, something outside of himself to compare to his idea and go, hey, one second, that's a pretty good idea. I see, I'm not, my thing is not perfect. You see, they're saying a person could critique himself, but he needs something external that he could use as a way of looking at his own idea. You see, now if you have a sefer that offers a new idea, then you have something, a comparison, a grounds for comparison, and say, whoa, one second, what about that? You're right. You see, then he can work on himself. He can work on his own idea. Okay? So then if you hold the sefer as good, what you're saying is a person could examine his own ideas, but he needs a certain condition. He needs the condition of having some outside source of knowledge that he could look at himself. You see? But if you maintain that, no, if in the process of self-critique, he's always subjective. He's always partial to himself. So even if he has an outside idea, and then he could say, hey, one second, he has something to tell him, a clue that his thing might not be exactly on track. You see, that's good, but the thing is that in criticizing, in looking at himself, he still has the partiality. You see, he can't be totally objective, even when he has another idea. So he needs somebody else to really assist him in analyzing his own idea. If the only person analyzing his own idea is himself, he's not going to be able to do it. Okay? So if you maintain you need a chaver, then you need somebody outside in both respects. You need new ideas, but also you need, in the process of analyzing your own idea, you need help. You cannot be the judge and the jury, if that's the correct analogy. I don't know if it's judge and jury, but right, you can't be the prosecutor and the defender at the same time. Can't do it. Person cannot do it. Can't assume both roles. Okay? So then you need a prosecutor. I think that's a better analogy. Right? You're a lawyer. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
You cannot be the prosecutor if you're the defender. Not possible. Okay? The first way holds that is possible. It is possible for a person to assume an objective frame, but he does need something outside ideas that are introduced that can give him objectivity, that can put him in an objective frame. If he has another idea that he read in a book, you see, that's good enough. It gives him an objective frame because it gives him somebody else, the ways another person would look at it. Ah, I see there's another way to look at this. You see, that immediately puts him in an objective frame of mind where he sees, hey, there are a few ways to look at this thing. Let me pursue this a little further. You see, that will do it. Okay. But according to the second mandama with the sefer, it's not good enough. The objective frame of mind won't do it. It won't do it. It will do it analyzing somebody else's idea, but it won't do it analyzing your own idea. There you need assistance in the very analysis. Okay? And that's why you got to check it according to that side. You must check it with a chaver or a talmid. You got to have somebody else that's going to impartially attack you. If you don't have an attacker, you cannot be your own attacker. You must have an outside attacker. And if you have that, then you have a chance. Right? Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, is this really machlokas? I mean, it seems first of all, it seems like a machlokas and metzias the way you're saying it.
Why?
I would think that.
But it's good, you're attacking me. Yes.
I would think that both sides would agree that it's better to have a chaver. Isn't the first side just saying, maybe just interpreting this, the Mishnah and saying what the Mishnah means here is this is a good thing, I don't know about sufficient, but a good thing, you know, and the other side is saying more like, whatever, that's not what the Mishnah means. Maybe I misunderstood you, but it sounded like you were saying that they're arguing over whether or not the sefer is just as good as a chaver.
No, I agree with that. In other words, I would say both sides would say the chaver is the ultimate. Right? Because he really provides everything. He provides ideas, and he's a critique for you. But the question is a sefer sufficient? Will a sefer save you from what the pasuk says, cherev al abadim? That people that learn alone become stupid. Will the sefer save you from that? So the first mandama holds a sefer is good enough.
Is that an argument in Metzias then?
No, it's not an argument in Metzias. No, it's not an argument in Metzias because you're saying a person's partial, right? And a person needs objectivity. And the question is, does he need objectivity? Is it enough if he has an outside idea? Does that give him a frame of objectivity? Or you say no, it gives them a frame of objectivity in one respect, but still in the self-critique, that's not good enough. You know what I mean? In the self-critique, there he still will be partial. You mean, you're asking me, what are you asking? You're asking, is that a machlokas and metzias?
Yeah, like how the psychology works.
How objective a guy can be under the two different conditions.
That's a good question. Is that a question, just a fact? Will the man be objective? Let's test 100 people, put them, it's a test group, control group, 50 guys do this, 50 guys do that, and see which guys say stupid things. Right? That's a good question. What do you say?
Maybe they agree that they both agree to the level of objectivity that each one allows, but they disagree on how objective you have to be when you're learning. Can you only learn if you're going to be totally objective,
right?
Or could you still gain from learning even if you're still partial in some way?
Okay, that's good. Yeah. In other words, there's a partiality, there's still a partiality, but you do have an objective frame.
Right, so you still do gain. Right.
Okay, yeah.
Just maybe to add to that a little bit, because the lashon here is k'nei l'cha rav, I mean, it's like k'nei l'cha chaver. Maybe insofar as, I mean, kinei is when you acquire something, you have to give up something for that.
Okay.
So maybe insofar, maybe it's not talking about what is the ideal, because I think they would all agree the chaver is ideal.
Right.
But insofar as, I mean, I think taking kind of what Shlomo was saying, that the as long as you give up something, as long as there's like a sacrifice there, whether buying a sefer, investing time in the sefer, like acknowledging, subordinating yourself sort of to the sefer, or having a chaver there, there is a gain, and there is something to still gain from that, as opposed to, you know, I guess, whatever, just doing something on your own. Like, once you invest in something, then you want that thing to, you know, you do subordinate to it to some degree.
No, sure. In other words, there's a different.
I'm taking from the fact from the kine. Well, let me think about it. Maybe I didn't say it. Right,
okay.
Let me,
okay, but the approach we're going on is in terms of just objectivity, right? So you're saying that if you have an objective frame, you have other ideas, that puts you in an objective frame, and therefore that's enough. Right?
If you would agree that's not the best,
you may not
produce the best fara, but you still gain from doing that.
Okay, good.
As opposed to, imagine the lower level where you're just doing it on your own with no sefer.
Right.
Then he would say, don't even do that. That's dangerous.
It's dangerous. You go
right.
off
but
the track.
But if you have the sefer, it's true you may not produce the best fara. If you find a friend later, you should bounce it off him. But you shouldn't refrain from learning as long as you have a sefer.
That's good.
Because then it will be dangerous, and you'll
right.
probably gain from it.
Right. That removes the danger.
Right.
Right, and the one that says chaver? See, the thing is like this. Maybe you could say like this. If you know, it's a good question. I mean, what's the theoretical question? Maybe you say like this. When a person looks at his own ideas, he's influenced. Right? The question is, why is he influenced? Is he influenced because it's his idea? He's partial to his idea? In other words, like this. If when a person looks at his own sfaras, he becomes partial, right? Now the question is, if the person has other ideas, it puts him in an objective frame of mind vis-a-vis the subject. You see, vis-a-vis the subject, he has other concepts, and therefore it puts him in an objective frame of mind how to view the subject. You see, so the question is, does that remove the impartiality? In other words, is the impartiality because he's not in an objective frame. He's looking at the subject, you see, but he only has his own ideas. When he has other ideas, that brings him in to a certain different ways of looking at it. Now he could view that he can get into the subject matter and look at the subject. That will take away the partiality. In other words, if the person, let's put it this way, if maybe things like this, if a person, the reason why a person becomes partial is because he's not totally into the area. In order to be into the area, he needs a certain kind of, he needs not just his ideas, he needs to bounce ideas, to have a new input of ideas. It opens the area up. You know what I mean? You see how you see another idea, a third idea. How different he sees the subject from different angles, it pulls him in, and then he gets involved in understanding the thing. Then he loses his own partiality. You see, because he's pulled into the subject. If that's the case, then reading books would be good. You see, because then I'm reading other ideas, and it pulls the mind in to the subject. Then I get taken away with understanding that thing. You see, I'm attracted to that thing, and I forget about who said what. You know what I mean? If the only ideas on the table are mine, then I'm partial to the fact that I said things. If I have other ideas, many ideas, you see, then I forget about who said what, because then I'm looking at the problem, my mind is engaged, my mind is more engaged in the area, You see, it engages my mind more in the area if I have many ideas that I have to go look at the area from different angles. You see, it increases my engagement in the area, and when I'm engaged in an area to a greater extent from different angles, that takes away a person's subjectivity. Okay. But the thing is, right?
The other Mandharma disagrees with that.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Yeah, does the other Mandharma disagree?
The other Mandharma doesn't disagree. Well, one second. Let's have to go one. Have to develop one guy at a time, right? So the person is saying, as long as I have a different angle to look at the thing, you see, that allows me a certain kind of objectivity with regard to this matter. Okay. All right. But if I only have my own, you see, then I'm never outside of my own mind. Okay. My mind doesn't have to search beyond its initial approach. Okay. So then you'd say, as long as I have another approach, you see, so that's one form of safeguard. Okay.
Safeguard from what?
From mistake. Of safeguard from mistake. You mean so the question is, you mean the other guy now, but he agreed, they both agree that Chavra is greater. They both agree Chavra is greater. Right, so then why doesn't the second guy say this is enough? I see, right. Right, they both agree that the second way is greater because the second way is forcing you to be objective directly with regard to your ideas. The guy's hitting you within the process of your very thought pattern.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
can
good.
Can I try something? Or
good, yeah, good.
I was thinking that maybe it's just machlokas in what the in what the Mishnah is trying to caution you against. Meaning that the way of going of saying that you should have a safer, it's just cautioning you against practically coming up with false ideas and not being exposed to good ideas. Because if I read a sefer, I could always say with a sefer, it's good, it's a nice idea, I hear that, I see that part, I see that way of looking at this area.
Right.
But I like mine better. And there's just no, like, you can't,
right.
You can't help the guy pass that. That's how he's going to feel, and that's it. It's not necessarily going to help that part of him. And he is exposed. He's exposed to good ideas. That's good. And he's still kind of guided. But I think the other way of going to say that you should have an actual person there is to say that the Mishnah is kind of cautioning you against something a little more, meaning that not necessarily that you should have you should be exposed to good ideas, but your own tools should be when you're learning, your own tools should be sharpened in the proper way. Meaning when you have a friend there that you're learning with, I mean, it might be that he has good ideas also, but the main benefit of that is that your own thinking patterns are going to be sharpened. You are going to have to defend your own svaras. It's your own svaras cannot be just left there to say, oh yeah, I like my way better, because your chavrus is going to combat that, and he's going to challenge that, and you're going to be forced to defend that and be forced to look at it. And when you're forced to do that, then now you're forced to better that skill of yours. That is a skill of being objective. But the other side's not disagreeing with that. It's true, that is a worthy skill, and it's kind of necessary in learning when you want to develop your own ideas. But in terms of the Mishnah is telling you, it's not, the other side of the Svarim is just saying you should be exposed to good ideas, and you know, not just go rampantly saying your own ideas, But you should be exposed to proper ideas, even though you might not have that sharpened tool.
Well, is that good enough or not good enough?
Good enough? Good enough, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of a machlokas, and good enough for what? Meaning, what is it directing you towards? Is it directing you towards a derech of learning on your own? And if you're going to end up learning on your own, then you're going to have to, or like, I guess, I'm not really sure, actually. I'm not really sure.
Well, the thing is like this. What you're saying is makes sense. The thing is like this. Is if I have a chaver, is that good enough?
Yeah.
Right? I can have a chaver who can question me, and it doesn't help me. It doesn't help me. Or he doesn't ask. He may not ask a certain question on me. Or even if he asks, I reject it. There is no... You see, the answer is, there. Obviously, if a man insists on being irrational or partial, there is nothing you can do for him. You see, this is not a guarantee. This is a method that a person utilizes to help him be objective. You see? So there are two factors in that. There is ideas, and then there's the actual process of working out of working out the concepts. You see? So the question is, which is enough? Is it enough if I have objective ideas? And I don't have assistance in the method of working it out. Is that enough? That's a question.
Enough
for a person to feel that he has taken measures to ensure objectivity. Is that enough? It's not a factual question, because it's simply, is that sufficient? I mean, it's you can't prove one way or the other. There's no way to determine it psychologically. The question is it rational for a person to think under those conditions? Or will he say, that's, if you're going to pursue that, you might as well, you may end up saying stupidity, you might as well go out to work. Don't learn under those conditions. It's a theoretical question, because there are two factors involved. So the question is, is that the major factor? You see, is that the major factor in checking subjectivity? Or do you say no? If you don't have a check in both components, not good enough.
Both?
That's the question.
Both meaning what?
Both meaning, like Sammy was saying, both meaning having alternate ideas to compare your ideas to. And the second one is in having somebody to check you in the actual process of working out the ideas. You see, in the actual procedure of how you're going through in your particular idea, how to work things out, you have a guy hitting you right and left. You see, the question is, do you need both factors? Obviously, if you have both, that's the greatest. You see, but would you say, if I have one of the factors, is that considered a situation that lends itself to chachma? No, no, you're just putting yourself in a crazy situation.
Because yeah, you're saying, yeah, because both of them, anyway, anything you're going to say can always come back to, well, yeah, I might just say
that's
crazy ideas anyway.
Exactly. Am I crazy? Yeah.
Right. So I see. So they're just having a machlokas, and how far do you have to go to say that now I'm learning in the proper derech now, like rationally now, to the point where I'm cautioned enough against not making these mistakes. Of course, I'm always subject to it. I can't not be subject to it. I always am. But what's a rational way in going about the fact that there is this problem there?
You could also imagine the chaver not necessarily being better in that it has both, because maybe the chaver won't have his own idea. He's really good at questioning you, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's not creative.
Right.
So then you lose out on the other idea, which gives you the frame of objectivity.
That's right.
But it's true, you gain on the on the process.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
So there are advantages to both. So if you have both, then of course it's going to be better.
That's right, exactly.
But there are two.
That's right, exactly. In other words, it's an example. The chaver is an example of both components. It doesn't mean that every chaver is going to have new ideas on his own, or every chaver may have ideas, and he's not good, very good. He's a polite guy. He doesn't want to ask any questions. You see, but he's giving an example of both components. And the question is, how do you define a situation that lends itself to chachma? Do you need just the first component, or any both?
When we say, when we use the terminology are we implying the fact that are we implying like an idea there in terms of like implying like being discriminatory and choosing a chaver to acquire both those components?
That's good. You mean it's saying that a person should be discriminatory? Not necessarily. There's a chaver and there's a chaver. So you're saying kane gives a connotation that I should choose somebody.
Right. It comes down to the choice. The side of the says farim might even say that choose the chaver that has new ideas, even if he's not going to question you.
It could be. I mean,
not the perfect. Right.
It's hard to say. I mean, because usually Pirkei Avos, what it's trying to do, instead of giving you particular practical advice, you see, it is practical, but instead of giving practical advice, usually what Pirkei Avos is, it's giving you the idea. What are the principles that you should operate by? You see, and how you implement them, that you have to work out. So it's giving you the concept that there are two concepts in a situation of thought. One concept is ideas, alternate ideas. The other concept is critique. You see, how you work it out, you have to work out. You know, you may think you can choose a chaver because you say, this guy doesn't have, I don't want this guy, he doesn't have good ideas. He may have very good ideas once you start learning with the guy. So it's not really giving that kind of advice. The advice it gives you is, what are the elements? So if you're going to learn, try to get a chaver. Could you know if he's has for us, how much critique he will critique you? You don't necessarily know until you learn with the person. It's hard to evaluate a person without really knowing him. You see? But that's what it's telling you. And if you can't do that, then some say even the first element is still considered roi for limud. Right, but that's good. You're correct in your question that it's not a mitzias. It's they're trying to outline what is the proper environment for limud.
Just one other question, I guess. The Chirv El Abaddon?
Yeah.
And then it says you become stupider, is that what it says?
Yes.
Which is, what's that?
Foolish. Well,
why will it actually happen that you'll be worse off?
You'll be worse off because, because the thing is that the person's, when a person works out ideas, he's not going to hit the right idea, ever. When a person works out ideas, usually, part of the process of working on ideas is process of elimination. He thinks about the thing, he goes, oh, what about this? Nah, this. He goes through different possibilities. You see? If he doesn't do that in the proper way, if he doesn't have somebody that helps him or some kind of objectivity, and he's going through that process, he's going to end up off the track. He's going to have to start saying things that don't really hit the mark.
I'm asking, it's actually worse? Like, if he has two choices at this moment, to learn by himself or to watch TV,
Could be worse, yeah, because a guy goes into an area where he can't understand what he will do is, he will say false ideas. So
you better for him not to go down the wrong, because the wrong path is going to
see that again, that's a practical application. You know what I mean? So the thing is that all it's telling you is that a person who does that, he is risking becoming more ignorant than before he started. Right? Sometimes you find a person writes a book, like Gil was mentioning, if you read books on subjects by people that are spent their whole lives studying a thing, and they're more ignorant than you, and you don't know anything about it, because you look at the book, you say, this is stupid. Now, you could imagine that guy, before he started on this path, he probably was had the same knowledge as you. Like, he would say, you know, whatever, he'd have a superficial knowledge, but now he doesn't have superficial knowledge, his knowledge is absolutely false. So it is not always advantageous to study a thing under the wrong conditions. You will be worse, yes, than had you remained just an Amo Haaretz and had a superficial understanding. But a true idea in a basic way is better than a false idea in a deep way. So yeah, that's definitely true. You may be better off watching TV. TV sometimes, not... Like we say, everything in moderation. TV could be a very good thing. The guy has a choice. Let's see. Learn by myself and say stupidity. Watch TV. Watching TV keeps me busy, keeps me occupied, keeps me out of trouble. Not so bad.
Is that on tape?
You hear that? Okay, very good, very good. Just got it.
Thanks.